forget yourself and leave the motor running. The house will soon get. And you can't smell carbon.
That's right. Yeah. If there is, that means this is.
One of the coordinators.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
They volunteer at the Meal on Wheels and St. Vincent de Paul and. Lately, they've even been working with Seton College.
What do they do in Seton Hill?
They've got some volunteers working there with them. I heard about it in a meeting not long ago.
And you coordinate getting the volunteers to the places that they're interested in?
Where there's old people retire and I talk to them about making themselves useful. And doing volunteer work here and there. Worked with the Hope Center.
What's the Hope Center?
Hope Centers for Abused Women. And I've been with that about 13 years. And I go to all their meetings. And I've taken lessons off on them, you know, on how to run the hotline, stuff like that.
So you do some of the volunteering, too, it sounds
like. Oh, yeah, I do volunteer work, too. In fact, I've been a life member of Historical Society.
Are you coming to the meeting tonight? Are you coming to the meeting tonight on the murals?
I'd have to. What's the meeting about?
It's about those murals, no painted in the stairwell.
Oh, no, I didn't hear it.
7:30 tonight, there's a meeting about that.
I write articles for them, too, see? You can keep that.
Okay, thank you. I will be glad to look at this.
And here's a brochure we put out all over the county. See? Here's all the organizations we've worked with, we have volunteers at.
That's wonderful.
Hmm? St. Vincent, St. Agnes.
Yeah. I have a friend whose father is at St. Anne's home as a patient.
Yeah, we have volunteers here. Love it. See? Atikiske Valley Historical Society.
Oh, good.
See? There again, I'm listed as one of the coordinators.
Uh-huh. Oh,
so I've been on that payroll for 13 years.
Good for you. That's a wonderful thing to do.
Keeps you pretty busy. I work with four different senior centers.
Hmm.
In my end of the county. And you meet a lot of people.
I bet you do. Yeah. The volunteers and the people in need, that would be great.
So a lot of that schooling went paid off.
Sure did.
Going to extra classes and stuff. Did you ever take extra sensory perception?
No. Did you take that?
Yeah. Did you ever read about it?
A little bit about it.
Yeah. It's interesting. You get the sense people by their actions, what they're thinking like, you know. It teaches you how to sense things about people. And it's important.
Oh.
I took it years ago as a supervisor at PPG. A lot of times it helped you with, especially if somebody was giving an argument or something. Mm-hmm. You know?
Were you involved at all with any union activity at PPG?
With what?
Unions?
No. I was only involved as far as salary was concerned, as an officer of the company, but not as a, when I first went to PPG, I belonged to the union, but once I got on salary, I was out of it.
Mm-hmm. Which PPG did you work at?
Right down here in Creighton.
Creighton one.
They sent me different times to seminars they'd have, which were concerned about how to relate to the union and and control things, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you work with a lot of other people from this area?
Oh, yeah, quite a few from me. You know, most of my people in my shop were from this area. You know. My electricians, and I had machinists and welders. No.
Mm-hmm.
They were all from around here.
Mm.
Then PPG used to send me to Penn State a lot. I went about 12 years at Penn State.
Wow.
Night school, you know. And they paid for anything I wanted. So why not take advantage of it? Like some guys that criticize me and say, what are you doing that for, you know? I say, hey, PPG may shut down someday. Back when you got something to...
When you said that, did you know that would really happen?
No, PPG never did shut down.
Didn't they?
No.
They're not, they're different though, aren't they? In terms
of yeah, they've modernized and they got rid of a lot of stuff that they used to do. They don't melt glass anymore and things like that.
Uh-huh.
There used to be a plant of 4,500 men, and now they're about, I'd say about 600.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. Although they still make as many windshields as they did then.
Did they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Same number. That would have a big effect on this area.
Oh yeah, had quite a bit. That had an effect a lot of your young people moving away.
Mm. Do you have children?
Oh yeah, a son and a daughter. My daughter lives out here at Bakerstown Road. And she's married to a Joe Cray.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever heard the name.
No.
And my son lives in Hot Springs, Arkansas. We just came back from there about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's a pilot, and he flies out of Hot Springs.
Would he have been able to stay around here? Would he have been able to find work here?
Well, he started, I sent him to college after Findlay, Ohio, and he graduated in business management, and that's where he worked for Cooper Industries in business management, and he was labor relations director, and at the same time he kept taking flying lessons. He was always a bug for flying. Even as a kid, I used to take him over and fly him model airplanes. You know,
mm-hmm.
You build them and fly them. You know. And one time he came home, I knew he was always taking flying lessons. It took about 3 or 4 or 5 years. One time he came home, he told me, he says, I'm going to change jobs. I'm going to take a job that pays less than half of what I'm getting now. I told him, you're single, no dependents.
Mm-hmm.
You do what you like to do.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to go flying.
So has it worked for him?
Oh, well, he kept advancing in the flying. He was a corporation pilot for a good many years until the bottom dropped out of oil business.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways of corporation flying changed. It used to be almost all big companies had planes.
Mm-hmm.
Today, they don't. They rent planes.
Mm.
Because you stop to think of a company owning a plane, they have to have like 2 pilots on yearly salary, you know, and maintenance of the plane and all that. And maybe there's sometimes a week or two don't even need the plane.
Yeah.
So he flew for Phillip Petroleum. And made a lot of nice trips to Bermuda and different places in Mexico and Canada and all around. And when that fell apart, and he started flying for Texas Air. And of course, they have a fleet of planes that they rent to their commuter line.
I see.
I asked him one time why he didn't go for getting on with U.S. Air or one of the big airlines. He said he didn't want to because he said if you're an airline pilot, you may fly Pittsburgh to Chicago all your life.
Oh.
And never do anything else. Like driving a bus from Pittsburgh to Trenton and Trenton to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
He says it gets monotonous.
It
so if you're flying like he does, next week he made 2 trips last year to Haiti.
To where?
Haiti.
Oh, really?
Island of Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And, fine business people.
Mm-hmm.
He flies a, they have a 30 passenger plane. He flies a whole group of business people down there and fly them back.
Did your daughter go to college?
She went to Geneva and then the Robert Morris.
Geneva down in Beaver Valley.
Yep.
Beaver
mm-hmm. And I've got three grandkids, and they all, the last one graduated from college last December.
Oh my God.
She graduated from Pitt. And she's working out here at Woodline now. She graduated in that computer graphics and that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's what she's working at.
Good for her.
And make up the designs for, they make light fixtures and that thing.
Mm.
And they make, put on the computer what the machine turns out.
I
not
couldn't
they
do
put
that.
That on a computer, and then the disk of that put in the machine, and the machine does it. Things like that. Yeah. Plus, they design new pictures and that, you know, design all that on computer today. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, would they?
Yeah.
Sounds complicated.
And there and there, she makes trips for the company where they go in to look at something, you know. And,
uh-huh.
Yeah. So she's got a good job. And the other grandson, the youngest grandson, he graduated from Pitt also. And he's an electrical engineer for U.S. Steel.
Mm.
In fact, last fall they sent him to see five companies in Europe, see? You know, on electrical work, see?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the companies was in my hometown.
Really?
So I telephoned my cousin over there, and my cousin met him, and he was only there a day and a half in that town. See? Took him all around town, ate lunch with him and everything, ate a couple of meals. Took him around. See?
Do you think he got that interest from you?
Oh, yeah, because he used to go wiring with me.
Mm.
Yeah, I used to, in fact, I was church electrician for about 40 years.
That's what you said.
And like any time to rewired the priest house at that time years ago, back in the 50s, you know, I had the job in the convent and that, you know, and then everything around the church.
Did
that was my volunteer work.
I thought it probably was. Did you do
but
that?
But I used to have both of my grandsons worked. You know,
that's wonderful.
Then all the years when they had the church fair, they always worked with me. And then sometimes I'd do wiring jobs somewhere else. And I'd take them along. And they got to the point where they could change an entrance to a house by themselves, see?
Mm.
And so they picked up the interest, and my grandson became an electrical engineer, you know. In fact, I gave him all my books. See, I had a lot of courses, electrical books that I had from my studies years ago. I gave them all to him. And I told him, they may be a little different today, but sometimes if you have a hard time picking up a version in one book, read the same subject under another author and you'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
See? A different slant of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You might understand it better. See?
Did you do the wiring for the new church? What was the new Sacred
no,
Heart
no.
St. Peter?
That was under contractor.
Oh,
yeah. And the other grandson, he went to Indiana College. He went 7 years up there. He took his postgraduate, too, in business. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working for a True Value hardware store. And the last 2 years in college, he was a manager for him. And the old guy he worked for treated him real good. He always fixed his schedule according to his schoolwork.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah. And then he got, the old guy got ready to get out of business. He sold it to my grandson.
How nice.
Yeah.
Is that where he is now?
Yeah. He has a True Value hardware store right in the center of town, right on the main street.
Good for him.
A big building.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got the whole hardware store. There's three floors to it. And here last year, he managed to buy the building. See?
Gosh.
And also they expanded in the rental business now. He took the basement and made it a rental business. Mm-hmm. That way they can rent tools and
mm-hmm.
equipment. So he's got his hands full.
Yeah, he does. Good for him.
And he's got a full-time salesman. You know, that's a borderline, Indiana is a borderline of Pennsylvania Dutch country up there.
Oh, is it?
There's about 50 square miles of Pennsylvania Dutch.
Oh, I didn't know
it. Big section of Pennsylvania Dutch. And in fact, you go up there, you start seeing all the buggies on the roads.
Hmm.
Off the main roads, you know. More than buggies. And, so he's got a salesman that goes between the Pennsylvania Dutch and takes orders. And he says when they order paint, they order 30 or 40 gallon at a crack. Because they're making stuff. They're making furniture. They make swings and all kinds of stuff. They're good craftsmen, you know.
I want to ask you more about Tarentum. Do you remember the merger between Sacred Heart and St. Peter's?
Oh, yeah. I remember of it. I belonged here, you know.
Uh-huh.
They came around and got everybody had pledged so much money, you know.
For the new church, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And different families, you know, everybody pledged according to what mm-hmm. they could do. Some pledged to get their name on a window or something, and they pledged a lot more,
see.
You know.
Yeah. What do you think that was like for people to come together in the two parishes?
There was no trouble between St. Peter's Sacred Heart. I don't think it was any hard feelings. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear of any.
Wonder why.
Maybe because most of it was Italians and Germans.
You think the Italians and Germans tend to get along well?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Germany never goes to war without taking Italy along. I don't know if that's a good benefit or not.
I don't know if it is or not either.
But that's one of the side benefits.
What about this merger then? This merger is about 2 years old now.
That's working good, mainly, I think, on account of Father Grosko.
Ah.
He's got the personality that can bring it together, you know. And,
uh-huh.
and being Polish himself, you know,
uh-huh.
helps, you know. I think they're harder people to merge.
I wonder why people find
they're more
it
ethnic inclined than a lot of other ones. You know, the Germans assimilate easy into becoming Americans, and Italians do too. See? But the Slavs and the Polish, they like to stay Polish and Slovak regardless. They try to keep the language up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You take most of your Germans don't know how to talk English. They don't talk German anymore. They lose it quick, you know. And I think that that ethnic is stronger with them than they like to be their own gang, you know. They like to be the Polish church. But they don't realize them. I was on the finance committee here for about 6 years at Sacred Heart before it became Holy Martyrs. And right after came Holy Martyrs, rather. There was always three on the finance committee. It had nothing to do with the board. It was separate from the board of the church.
The parish council, you mean?
Yeah, parish, separate from the parish council. See. In fact, didn't even meet with them. And so I saw a lot about the finances and that, and I realized that if you don't have at least 1,000 people in the church, you can't make ends meet. The time has changed.
Uh-huh.
You can't run a small church anymore.
We probably have that many people, don't you, in Holy Martyrs?
About 2,500. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But a small church of 1,000, like St. Clement, is too small in itself.
Just by itself,
You take insurance alone. I can remember years ago where you paid maybe $2,000 a year insurance. Today you're talking $20,000.
Mm.
You takes a one-third of what you collect in the church in a year's time to just pay for insurance. Right?
Mm.
But things have changed. And I can remember when I was young, somebody would fall in church or something, and I'd never think of suing the church. Right?
Right. Do they now?
Oh,
has
yeah.
Someone sued the church?
Some doctor will get at, some lawyer will get after him. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lady fell off of a chair. Slipped off her own fault, you know, slipped off the chair in church. And, well, you know, her lawyer got $5,000 for it.
Mm.
No more insurance company. Well, that makes your rates go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Are new people joining the parish?
New people?
Mm-hmm.
I hope they are. I really don't notice it, because I don't, you know, notice as much about the new people. I think in our time in the parish we had a lot more activities for the young people than you have today.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have a lot of dances done in the church basement and parties, Halloween party or something like that, you know. That we had young people's clubs at the and the church would give us the basement for having our parties.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We don't hear that anymore. And at that time we'd have a dance, and our club would have a dance, you know, a young people's club. And it wasn't that there was not just nothing there but Catholics. I think they'd bring their friends, and some of them weren't Catholic.
Mm.
And it was tolerated. Today they seem to worry about what the damage is going to be and all that kind of thing. And then again, some of it relates back to insurance. Yeah. It used to be that today, if you have activities like that, your insurance company starts worrying whether they're going to cover you if you're doing stuff like that. You know?
Mm.
You know, we used to use that schoolyard. That was a regular, that parking lot was a regular playground when I was a kid.
When you were a kid.
Oh, yeah. We had that for ball games every day. And in the wintertime, you made slides down the banks, you know, for sliding down.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, you must have ruined anything that was growing there.
And the church didn't care.
Uh-huh.
And today, one time we had a, these kids with their skates, you know, they built themselves a little ramp at the end of the parking lot.
Yeah.
And Father Meyer didn't do anything about it. He figured to let them use it. You know, before you know it, our insurance company, hey, if you're going to have that, it's part of your play. That's the church yard. You're going to have the raised thing.
Mm.
They're afraid some kid's going to fall, hurt himself in church. She went to the other thing.
Mm.
That changes a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. When you were a kid, did the kids that play together, were they from the different ethnic groups?
Oh, yeah. We played ball at this after school, and that we had kids that were Polish, Slavish, lived in the neighborhood, you know, they came to all play ball together, you know. Mm-hmm. We played ball at recess, it'd be just our kids from the school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But after school, if we had a game going, it'd be kids from the whole neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
Where did you play any place else besides in that church parking lot?
Oh, we had down Peterson. We used to play ball down there. That's right down the bottom of the hill here. Mm.
Yeah. I know approximately where that was. Mm. Wasn't it around near where more of the black people lived?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you have black kids that played with you when you were down there?
No, not really. That they somehow didn't get assimilated that far as playing together, you know. Of course, I can't fault that too much because there weren't that many blacks around here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the... We're not like Pittsburgh, you know, where there's a bigger group. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we isolate them because they were black. We just never got the... Because you went to high school, you got along with them, you know.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved in that carpet, the sawdust carpet tradition?
No, my grandkids were.
Were they?
Yeah. My granddaughter always works with it every year.
How did she get interested?
How'd she what?
How did she get interested in it?
Well, I think some of her friends are interested in it. Yeah. Kuniaks and that.
Oh, Now, they tell me that that custom is from Germany.
Yeah, that came over from Father Zeller brought that in.
Were you aware of that in Germany at all?
No, I never saw it in Germany. Of course, I was kind of young to pay attention. You know, where I lived was a border. You could go in the city where I was at. You could go 3 miles and go to Belgium, and 7 miles that way and go to Holland.
See? And did you do that?
Like a triangle, see? And sometimes my mother and aunts and that, we'd go to, on a Sunday morning, maybe to Belgium and go to church. Because they had something special going. You know? And take a streetcar and go to Belgium and go to church.
You could do that on a streetcar.
And then sometimes we went to Holland because we had relatives in Holland. Cousins and that lived in Holland.
And they were German.
Well, German and Dutch and German is the same thing. You can't tell one from the other, even in language.
Really?
The Dutch speak German. The dialect's a little different, like Pittsburgh and New York City. But the language is the same. You go to Sweden and Denmark, the language is always the same, German. And the Swedes, Norwegians, and the Danes, it's all German language, but different dialects.
Now, you were telling me earlier, too, about the Slovak people you met who spoke German.
That was because some of the men spoke German because they were in the Austrian army. What they call the Austro-Hungarian army at that time, which was led by German officers, so they spoke German.
Now, were some of them people who lived here in Tarentum?
No, some came over here, Yeah, we used to have an old landlord up here where we lived right after the last trip we came back from Germany. We lived up on 10th Avenue up on. And the fellow that owned the house where we lived was a guy named Konus.
How do you spell that?
K-O-N-U-S. Now, he could speak German, because he originally come from over in Czechoslovakia, but he served in the Austro-Hungarian army. And he often talked to my dad some German. They weren't fluent in German, but they could understand, you know. So this is really a melding pot.
It seems like it is. Yeah. It seems like there have been a lot of different people here who came for different reasons, different industries and different works, and lots of different reasons.
Like a lot of your Germans came from the Aachen district, see? Mainly on account of that glass factory over there.
Okay, now, I knew a lot of the people who came from Belgium. Belgium came for
also the glass factory.
Yeah. And yet they didn't belong to Sacred Heart, didn't they belong more to St. Peter's?
No, but most Belgians are not Catholic. And most of them are different religion. I forget what they call that religion. But there's a church of it down here on 8th Avenue, the other end of 8th Avenue.
The west or the eastern part?
The west part.
I'll have to find out about that.
It's a small church. A lot of your Belgians go. Cordiers and all that went there.
Okay. Do you remember many people having gardens, vegetable gardens in Tarentum?
Well, in our time, almost everybody did. Small vegetable garden. Well, on a city lot, you can't really raise too much, but you raise your own lettuce, tomatoes, and stuff like that. You know. I even raise that myself.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
How How long you lived down here?
Bought this house 1952.
Oh. Mm. So that's still a while. That's over 40 years.
Yeah, 43 years.
Mm.
Brand new.
Mm. So you're the only family that ever lived here?
No. Yeah, we moved in up. First ones in.
Mm. Well, what are some of the changes you've seen in Tarentum?
Well, I've seen most of the business district getting bossed out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but then you see that over New Kensington almost every time. It's the shopping malls are knocking that out, you know. And actually, if you look at it right, malls. We go shopping, my wife and I go shopping every Sunday as far as that goes. And we usually go to a place where you throw in the Heights of the mall or something. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And you go from one store to the other. Not worry about how you park the car. You know, handy parking. That's what really does it.
The parking?
Yeah. You go to Trenum, you have to park on the street, and you might not find a place on 2 blocks away from where you're going. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were a kid, where did you shop in Trenton?
Well, my mother used to go to Murphy's 5 and 10. And her mother did too, Murphy's 5 and 10 every Saturday.
Where was that?
That was right on Corbett Street.
Oh.
Main Street. Yeah. And the fact that if you went Saturday night uptown, it was crowded.
Mm-hmm.
It was full of people. Because all the stores were busy, you know. And that's the only night of the week where they stayed open until 9 o'clock.
Saturday?
Yeah. Other nights, they never stayed open. Mm-hmm.
What about, were there small stores in the area?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of little stores. There's a lot of little mom and pop grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
And every block almost had one. And, well, you didn't have cars like today.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my mother a lot of times sending me down to Cray's store up on 10th Avenue. We lived half a block away. Go get a pound of this and get a pound of that.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, you didn't even use money.
Oh, could you charge?
I'd go in and I'd get a couple loaves of, a loaf of bread and maybe a pound of bologna, and Mrs. Craig go market in the book. See?
Mm.
In a little book with your family name on. See? And never give you a slip or nothing. See? And 2 weeks later, you stop and pay the bill.
Now, how would you know how much you owed?
Well, you took a guess. You let her add it up. You paid her. That's what I say, you don't do business like that.
No.
Uh-huh.
Did she carry people if they didn't pay?
Well, she didn't carry them so long.
Mm-hmm.
And then drop them, I guess. But that's the way, every 2 weeks, my dad would get paid. And he'd send me down with some money down to pay Mrs. Craig. And she gave me a bag of candy, penny candy.
Mm. What were the holidays like for you when you were growing up?
Well, in Europe at the time, the holidays I think were celebrated more than here.
Were they?
The church holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's where we used to go to Belgium to church sometimes because it had a big church holiday, you know. And actually, at that time, we were a simple country compared to Europe. In this area.
Here,
you
know, it was simple.
Mm-hmm. And like Father Zeller brought the carpet over here. That was done in Europe for hundreds of years already.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't done here at all.
And isn't done here much at all now,
no.
Except in Tarentum.
That's European tradition. So.
Uh-huh.
And that's why if you ever get a chance to go over there, you'll see beautiful churches that you'll never see here.
Mm-hmm. Older.
Huh?
Older.
And beautiful work in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen pictures.
Mm. That, And they're maintained by the state.
Oh.
Not by the church.
So the people's collection doesn't have to maintain them.
No. Nope. If you're taxed so much to maintain these buildings for church buildings and stuff like that. Early
the churches.
The churches.
Do you remember Christmases in town?
Oh, yeah.
What were they like?
Oh, kind of simple. I mean, we had my dad and make the tree up, you know, the day before and evening before, and they get up next morning, there'd be a presence under and all that, you know. What I liked in Germany was the fact that December the 6th, I think it is, they have that there. They were, Santa Claus comes around and puts something outside the door for him, cookies and milk and that, you know, and he leaves you a little present. You know. They celebrate that way before Christmas.
Did your family do that when you came over here?
Not over here, over there. Mm. Over there they did because everybody knew. All the kids were putting stuff outside the door. Mm. And you look in the morning, it was all gone.
Oh.
He ate it all.
Someone ate it.
They had things, that's where history counts, you know. They have things that go way back in history that are kept going, you know. If you own an old building along certain streets in the city that were built, say, 1,000 years ago, you may own that building, but you don't change it.
Oh.
You're not permitted to change it. You have to get permission from the city to even put a new door in. It has to be according to the prints of what the old door was.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that building stays the same. You have the privilege. And, of course, it's a privilege to live there. Because don't forget, you own something that you'd be proud you own. Mm-hmm. Even if you weren't permitted to change it.
Yeah, and it would be something for posterity.
Yeah. And in fact, I don't think you'd even want to change it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You'd want to keep it the same.
Yeah.
For your next generation. You know?
Yeah. I have one more.
A lot of those streets were built by the Romans.
Ah, and is it clear which ones were?
Oh, yeah. And Julius Caesar, when he conquered that part of Germany, about the time of Christ, and in Aachen there's these hot springs, like Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Hmm. That's where your son is, isn't it?
Huh?
That's where your son is.
Yeah. And they come. It's people came there for get rid of rheumatism and arthritis and that, you know. And Julius Caesar's mother used to come all the way from Rome. Stay there. So that was really a Roman city for about 400 years. And that's why you'll see a lot of Germans in that part have sort of an Italian name.
Oh, really?
You ever notice in a roster from the church here, like Ahenio? They're from Aachen. They've got really an Italian name, but they're German, 100% German. See? That goes back to the old Roman days.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the cookies and the things they make, my mother used to make what they call speculatio, see? And that's a German cookie. See? But it goes back to Roman days, to Julius Caesar's mother.
Did she make them too?
Huh?
Did she make them too?
She brought them from Italy and it caught on.
Mm.
You know how to spell speculatio?
No, I've made a note to ask you that.
S-P-E-K E-L-A-T-I-O-U-S. Spekulatius. So a lot of the, well, there are different names that came from our church that are Italian, you know, have an Italian derivation that are from Aachen. Right now I can't think of all of them.
Now, is that near the Black Forest where the carpet custom started?
No, that was in another part of Germany, but where Father Zeller's people came from. Yeah. I don't know. The under the Holy Ghost Fathers, almost all the priests that were here at one time were almost all German. I think most of the Holy Ghost Fathers are, mostly the ones I knew were mostly all German derivation. Because it was branches of the Holy Ghost Fathers in Germany.
I think
their order even came from there.
Maybe they did.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn this over before it runs out.